On December 24th, 1971, a teenager named Julianne boarded a flight.
Oh.
You know this one? In Peru to meet her father for Christmas. She and her mother got the last seats, and the airplane flew into a heavy thunderstorm and went down. She fell 2 miles from the sky, still strapped into her plane seat, into the jungle. She was the only person who survived among 92 passengers, which included her mother.
Jesus Christ.
And it said that her unexplainable survival has been called a modern-day miracle. So, and then she walked out of the jungle after she was badly injured. But apparently they think that the seat she was strapped into broke out of the plane was like three seats. So she was in the end seat, and there were two empty seats next to her on this platform. So they described it as like those whirligig seeds that fall out of trees.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So she did one of those?
So she was spinning around?
So she did this for 2 miles.
Did she remember that?
But that, she doesn't, I don't think she remembers any of it.
Huh.
But that was just enough slower so that when it got into the canopy of the jungle, then it must have bounced.
It wasn't plummeting like that, right?
Wow.
Yeah. It, right. It wasn't like a body just going down.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, and I think it went into a tree, I believe.
Right.
Right. It fell into
a
tree.
Right, into the jungle.
Which might have,
There was some show called, I Shouldn't Be Alive or something like that. And they did an episode on her. And that is one of the two instances in anything I've ever watched where I gagged. Where they were talking about how, you know, as she was in the jungle and stuff, like, things burrowed under her arms. And she knew that she had to. So they showed, like, this actor, you know, taking a pin and getting the boil and getting like the larva out. I almost threw up at that. It was so disgusting.
Gross.
Oh my God.
Is there any chance at some time at a movie that you could scream and then throw up at the same time? That would be awesome.
Maybe. The other one was in Cat People, where the more modern one, where zookeeper reaches into the cage. The cat, like the panther, grabs his arm, tears it off, and there's like a tendon that stretches as the arm goes.
That made you gag?
And then Malcolm McDowell in the same movie finds a, you know, he just killed someone. He finds a stray piece of flesh and eats it. Those were, so I guess there have been three instances.
Two in the same movie. That's a lot. That's quite a review.
That's what you said on one of the recent podcasts, Grace. You said something, I can't remember the subject, but you said the story could have been better if they were doing medical experiments on each other. It was something, nothing, had nothing to do with that. It was I don't know, it was Ted Lasso.
I don't remember
something.
That.
And then the other one I remember from recent editing is you said, you were talking about how you don't watch war movies.
Yeah.
And then you brought up some war movie that you watched. and we called you on it. And you said, oh, well, I can watch it if it's just swords and, you know, like Greeks or Chinese people.
I said that?
Which explains, you know, that's like the samurai movie.
Yes,
or,
that's what I meant, but know. I don't.
But the way you put it was.
I don't know. It sounds.
So anyway, the 40th anniversary of her falling out of the airplane was 2021. So that's when the article came out, and Werner was all over it. But I don't think anything.
How
happened.
Old is that guy now? Werner. He's got to be well into his 80s, right?
Yeah, I would think. I can't look it up. Bailey is our Googleist, official Googleist.
Documentary Now did one
Googleist.
About, you know, remember there was that documentary on the making of that, what film was it with him and Klaus Kinski, and they tried to move the boat across, you know.
Right.
So Documentary Now did one where they're trying to do a sitcom in some remote place. Alexander Skarsgård played the the Herzog role. It was funny.
He's 81.
Oh, I would have given him older than that. I mean, how long is he? Because in the 70s he was making movies, so he was only in his 20s then.
His net worth is $20 million.
Hmm. There's an interesting character. Remember, Wally, weren't you... Were you the one that found that funny stuff where there's some cartoon and someone being him was narrating it?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long is a league, Bailey?
Sorry?
How long is a league? How far is a league? Or how long is a league?
Yeah, what is... How far is 20,000 right. leagues under the sea?
A league is a unit of length. It's common in Europe. It may have originally represented roughly the distance a person could walk in an hour.
Okay, so it's like...
1.5 Roman miles.
What's a Roman mile?
The league
mile?
Was used in ancient Rome, defined as 1.5 Roman miles, or 7,500 Roman feet, modern mile and a half.
Mile and a half? Wow. They didn't have very good nutrition. But that's what I wanted to bring up, 20,000 leagues under the sea. I never knew this, but obviously... You can't have 20,000 leagues under the sea. That's like...
It says at sea, a league is 3 nautical miles, which is 3.452 miles.
Okay. That's what I remember.
Yeah, so that would be literally 60,000 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the deepest they've gone, what, is like 35,000 or something? And maybe that's the deepest that exists?
Yeah, I don't think it's anywhere near that far. It's Bailey, how deep...
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of 35,000 feet.
Sorry.
What's the deepest part of the ocean?
Straight through to China.
I'm not feeling very chatty today. Anyways, this is perfect. What are we looking up now?
Anyway, I never thought about that, and I saw the title. Somebody explained it's not 20,000 leagues deep. It's they traveled 20,000 leagues under the sea.
Oh.
And I think most people think.
You mean that, under the seabed, they went 20,000 miles under the bottom of the sea, right?
That ruins everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That ruins my whole appreciation of that movie.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought they were 20,000 leagues deep.
I'm sorry.
Did you find it, Bailey?
Oh, was I looking up?
What's the deepest part of the ocean?
Oh.
What's the
yeah, isn't that the Marianas Trench. Something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So cool. All the when you get those videos of like those Dumbo squid and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the shit that's down there. It's crazy. Like we don't need any aliens. We've got
no
them
kidding.
Right in the ocean, for God's sake.
I thought you said Dumbo squid.
It is Dumbo squid.
Jumbo. Here we go. The challenge?
No, Dumbo. There is a Dumbo squid.
Oh, what does that mean? They're just
it's
dumb?
Like this. No, it's like this.
I'll look that up
flowy
next.
Flowy kind of squid. It's hard. It's like a bell shaped with little feet, and I think they call it. And maybe it has like little things coming off, so it looks like Dumbo.
Mm. Wow!
It's so cool.
Never heard of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Challenger Deep is the deepest known point of the seabed of Earth, located in the western Pacific Ocean at the southern end of the Mariana Trench. There you go.
And how deep is that?
Come on, Bailey, as a researcher, that's something you're supposed to have right there, the tip of your tongue.
Well.
AI should be able to answer that.
Should we ask Kayla?
Yeah. Let's see what Kayla has to say. That would be funny if we had her in the Zoom and could she actually respond?
I know. I was thinking that would be funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I started watching A Murder at the End of the World and there's an AI character in there.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting. You can only, like, you can hear him, but then you have to point your phone at him to see him. It's really interesting.
All right, let's see. It contains the Earth's deepest point, the Challenger Deep, at 10,928 meters.
So that's 30,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 5-6 miles.
35,000 miles.
So that's nowhere near.
Maybe that's right. The circumference of right. The Earth.
So we ruined that.
Okay, I'm looking at the Dumbo squid now.
You can see that I'm really digging to the bottom of my notes here.
Yeah, I'll have to up my game here and bring some topics next time. Just remind me next time.
You know, I was lying in bed this morning thinking that we need to do a factoid show.
Mm.
We haven't done one of those in a while.
We haven't done any themed shows.
No.
Right.
Maybe the next one is a holiday theme, a Christmas theme.
Should we do like a themed factoid? Right. Or factoids around Christmas.
Yeah.
And...
Well, we could talk about the festive Christmas hair that I think I've mentioned on this podcast. It's the hair that always emerges in my plate at a holiday dinner.
Oh, that hair. I was like, where is she going with this?
Yeah, no. Jeez.
Okay, the Dumbo squid. You want to see what it looks like?
He's so cute. He's so cute.
I was thinking of Dickens, the Christmas hare, or the little rabbit that's...
Oh, like H-A-R-E? No, this is H.
Oh, you're thinking about this one.
Yeah,
probably,
look
right?
at how cute it is.
Can you imagine the things that are on this planet? Imagine what's on other planets. Imagine the kind of stuff you'd run into. Oh, my God.
So you guys heard the Oxford English Dictionary Word of the Year.
Riz.
Yeah. I've never heard that.
I hadn't either.
Riz.
Riz, like charisma.
Oh, yeah, we talked about this last time. You didn't want to say Riz in my script.
That's right.
In my Kayla script.
Oh, you mean that was the word that you used?
That's right, yeah.
Oh, I guess I didn't realize what it was.
You were supposed to say, she's really got the Riz.
I had no idea.
And you refused to say that because you thought it sounded like you were trying to be...
Maybe I was trying to be black, you know what I mean? Like, and I didn't want to be really obnoxious about it. You know, like where you get those little white boy rappers trying to say, and I was like, I didn't realize that was an internet term.
I heard it from young kids.
Wow.
And I had to look it up.
I am behind the times. I had not heard it.
So I already wrote it and you rejected it. Probably would have been better.
No.
Yeah. It would have sounded really awkward.
I remember, you know what the one... phrase that I think of all the time when I think of how the goofy things we used to say when we were kids. When we liked a boy, we would say, he's so tough. He's so tough. Like, where the fuck did that come from? Tough. And I have never heard it since. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've never even heard it on any movies or shows from that era or pretending to be in that era, you know? So was that like a Kenmore, New York thing?
Yeah.
Or was I don't even know.
When I was... a teenager, we used to refer, when we were having our periods, we would refer to it as Joe was visiting.
Joe.
That was our code. It was our code for it. Joe. I don't know where we got a man's name for our period, for a menstrual cycle.
I've never heard that.
Strange.
It's Louise.
I haven't thought about that in years.
Once when I was home, you know, I was like, I was probably 12, so my sister was 10, and my two sisters were fighting, you know, and my dad was sitting at the dining room table, and all of a sudden, my one sister goes to my other sister, you're such a dildo, and my father, like, his head almost exploded, and he's like, what did you just say? I had no idea, you know, and I mean, I think I had heard it too, but I didn't know what it meant, you know.
I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I've noticed with my daughter's generation, that instead of saying something happened by accident, they say on accident. Getting back to the period, I'm on my period, not having my period. I'm on my period.
Yeah.
I don't like that sound. I don't like on accident. That just doesn't sound right to me.
So. Well, it's funny. You know, the person that I follow, Grammar Girl, she'll take on stuff like that quite often, you know. And I mean, some of that is kind of Britishisms that have, you know, like I was good friends with... in grad school, my best friend, she and her husband were from Australia, and they always used to say, I'm going to ring you up. And so, I don't know, it just happened that I say that all the time now, I'm going to ring him up. And a friend of mine said, you know, you're the only person in the U.S. that says that, you know, but sometimes you wonder, like...
Me too.
Could, right. Yeah, thank you. Uh-huh. So, maybe it's just, you know, being exposed to more stuff on the internet, too.
Yeah, that could be.
You know, maybe it's, I don't know. Or, but, you know, then you think about, like, I remember the people from New York City that I knew in college, instead of saying, I'm standing in line, they would say, I'm going to stand on line.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. My friend in Buffalo, who's British, she and some friends of hers, also British, wrote this cute little book, you know, and she asked me if I could edit it for her just to proofread it and stuff, right? And there were so many Britishisms in there, and I was like, a few of them, I had no idea what they even meant. You know, that was kind of fun, though.
Did you take them out?
Well, a couple of them, I was like, well, if you want to put this out in the U.S., people are not going to understand this. But I think they just left them all in because they wanted it to be British, you know, because they all are.
So I had one more note, and then I'm done with all my notes for all time. For my whole life, for many years, I've had the theory that everything is a drug, that everything that humans do is to distract them, is like giving yourself a drug. no matter what it is, whether you're becoming you're coming a brain surgeon, so you focus your whole life on being a brain surgeon, or you stop to buy donuts on the way home. Every single decision that you make is a drug, a way to distract yourself from. I always thought of it as the tedious parts of life. Our brains need something else. Like we get a stamp collection. You join a furry club or something like
that.
You
had to bring that up.
It's all drugs. And then I was listening to the Paul Giamatti podcast where they talk about weird stuff. They brought up, there's a theory called by Ernst Becker from 1973, the denial of death. And basically, it was my theory, except they replaced, you know, drugs with everything we do is denying death. That's a subject, but we've talked too much about death. So yes, I looked it up, and I found that there's a new one that sort of replaced denial of death called terror management theory.
Terror?
Terror, which is the basic psychological conflict results from having a self-preservation instinct while realizing that death is inevitable and unpredictable.
Oh, God. There you go. Mm-hmm. That's my fucking life.
This conflict produces terror, which is managed through a combination of escapism and cultural beliefs that act to counter biological reality with more enduring forms of meaning and value. In other words, religion or whatever you're thinking of.
Art. Yeah.
Right. So insert something there.
So I thought that could be a subject, but like I said, we've done too much death on this podcast. But
yeah, I mean, I just stopped thinking about it because there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, but that's just kidding yourself. It's not kidding myself.
I know it's going to happen, so why bother to think about it? I feel like that's denial. It's not.
Worry about it,
I guess, is maybe more like it. Yeah.
Right. But that's sort of adopting a religion or something that says it's all right.
I'm not saying it's all right. I'm just saying there's nothing I can do about it.
Right. So that's become your mantra that helps you.
Yeah, it's more like, you know, the rat in the cage. The rat can't get out and it just, it's hopeless.
Right.
It's hopeless.
In other words, your terror management theory is not to think about terror management.
Yes. Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I just thought.
No, I see. I think that'd be an interesting thing to argue for sure, because I think you could be right. You know, like I'm saying, no, it's not. You know, it's not. Blah, 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 but in reality, it is.
Right. If I had come up with the drug thing and been like done my PhD on it, I would have been famous for like 12 minutes until Ernst Becker came up with denial of death.
Yeah.
Then I would have been.
Yeah.
Oh, what a dope. He couldn't take it to the limit there.
I mean, I see that all the time at my job, you know, like people are like, oh, well, this is really good for your heart. And then 2 minutes later, this is not good for your heart. You know, it's just constant.
Right.
Oh my God. Right. It makes you think like, why study anything?
Media caters to that. Every
Oh, for sure.
Coffee is good. Coffee is bad.
Absolutely.
Right. Red wine's good. Oh, but just one glass a week.
I just went to a lecture and she said that alcohol causes cancer.
Mm-hmm. I've
heard
that.
This is not like bullshit. It's, you know, verified, and it's certain kinds of cancer, and that like no amount of alcohol is actually safe.
Mm. Yeah, it's bad for you.
So there you go.
So this theory argues that cultural values offer symbolic immortality. For example, values of national identity, posterity, cultural perspectives on sex, and human superiority over animals have been linked to calming death concerns.
That's interesting. You know,
Superiority over animals.
Yeah, in my book club, we read this book that I didn't actually like that much, Ishmael. And it was about this talking gorilla. but that was one part of the book that I found really interesting. Like, why would we consider ourselves to be any more important than animals? You know, that's like a real like failing of humankind and contributes to all kinds of shit.
It's hard not to consider yourself superior to pond scum or.
I guess superior in the in the aspect of like why we are here, mm-hmm. you know, like every animal right. on earth is here for a reason.
Right.
And we are not any different.
Right. From that point of view, it's.
Yeah. It's just like when, you know, certain scientists talk about what the brain is and what thoughts are, you know, and it's just like, yeah, it's just some neurons firing mm-hmm. and there's nothing more exotic than that, you know, and consciousness is not whatever, you know, it's very depressing.
Right.
In some ways, but I think it's true.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, none of us will know until we go, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah, I checked out 5 minutes ago, so.
I'm
just watching the rain outside.
Whatever.